Could I have a motion, you have the agenda before you, could I have a motion to approve it, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Similarly, we have the minutes before us. Could I have a motion to approve them?
So moved.
Is there a second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We are going to take our first look today at the procedures, which is the second piece of our work. And I want to be very clear with folks how we got to where we are. Carol O'Keefe and her staff have been doing a really great job of tracking what has ended up in bylaws and what was still left in the 2011 interim procedures that the board adopted in January or February. So what you see before you is what's left, as well as topics where we said in our bylaws conversation, this probably belongs in procedures and not in bylaws. I have worked through this. I've made some suggestions. This is a straw man, so people should feel free to say, you know, whatever strikes your fancy on this. We'll spend an hour, and Lloyd had just distributed to you a copy of the memo that came by email yesterday that staff did that sort of takes us through what's different in the blue from the white one that you previously received. All right? So my suggestion is we'll just kind of work our way straight through. Please raise any issues that you have. We've got the notes from staff, and we can go from there. So, Mr. Downey.
Comment. Some issues that now get flagged because they are in procedures do raise questions about bylaws.
Yes.
And especially in a couple of cases where bylaws have been revised or edited since we saw them last. Right. We may want to raise some of those as well.
That's absolutely appropriate. And just to remind everybody, when we're going to pull the bylaws off the consent agenda and have a quick walkthrough of the bylaws to make sure we're all okay with what we will be sending out, because there are, again, a couple of places when we started looking back and forth that we thought better make some small adjustments, and I want you all to be comfortable with those when we send this out to the for public comment. Okay? So, any comments on Roman numeral 1? Hearing none. Roman numeral, Mr. Downey?
No, I'm sorry.
Roman numeral 2, which is the JCC, just so you all know, we have sent this section to the JCC and asked for their comments to make sure that this reflects how they do their work and, you know, isn't more or less than needs to be here. So we'll get their comment coming forward. Mr. Downey.
Under C, is it correct to say county administrative officers, or are these chief administrative officers?
Probably chief.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks. Good catch. All right.
Just before we turn the page.
Yes, Mr. McCain.
I did just have one, just a clarification. It's not for the purpose of the procedures, but just so that we know. And in number one, where it mentions that all requests to staff by board members are directed to the general manager, CEO, general counsel, blah, blah. I think that's good. Does that mean that that is also not only what we should be doing, but is it also understood that that is what any member of the WMATA staff would do upon receipt of one? For example, if I'm not thinking and I send something to another staff member, is the protocol internal at WMATA that that person send that to the general manager?
They better.
Just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
I mean, I think this is partly about our discipline, about where we send it. And so we really shouldn't send it to anybody. Yeah. Right. Right. And I would say, and maybe Mr. Sarles wants to comment on this, occasionally the jurisdictional staff that I work with will, in advance of a board meeting, send something to their staff peers trying to clarify something. I'm not viewing that as a violation of this. Yeah, this is board procedure. Okay. All right, good. Okay, so we're okay with two? Yes, Mr. Yule. Do you want to turn your mic on, Mr. Yule? Is your mic on?
The JCC will be providing us with their comments, but is there a timetable for that to be received, to be incorporated?
Excellent question. Ms. O'Keefe?
Well, I asked for it as soon as possible, but I can get back and do put a time frame on it. Actually, what they were provided initially was the resolution that created the JCC, which is a pretty old resolution. And what I'm actually looking for is whether they think any additional information should be included in the procedures. Because at the point that the board adopts the procedures, the resolution will provide for a repeal of the 1983 resolution.
And one issue that I have flagged fairly regularly is this 9 number, that we really need to kind of get some clarity on that. That's from the very beginning when this was formed. So we'll see what they send us. But
our chair will probably be here this afternoon because we have discussed it at least once.
Okay. So, I mean, but we can get it in writing. Mr. Giancola, do you have a question?
Yeah, on the committee meetings.
Which is?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading ahead.
You're reading ahead again.
All right, I'm sorry. I'll wait.
All right. Let's move on to number 3, which is communication with the public. This is an area where what's in the bylaws is actually fairly broadly written. I will remind everybody that this is an area that is of great interest to many of our stakeholder groups and to riders in general. So we got some placeholder language here. So I would I'm open to any suggestions people have or places that they think we should have a conversation. I have a couple on my list if no one else does. No? Okay, well, let me bring mine up. Oh, no, go ahead, Ms. Downey.
Under C,
comment
at board meetings, I just want to touch base with the question of have we ruled out public comment at committee meetings?
We had a lot of conversation about that last time,
yes or no.
My personal view is we should take public comment at committee meetings because by the time you get to the board meeting, especially when you're working as a committee of the whole, the answer is pretty cooked. And so the comment that comes 5 minutes before or 10 minutes before you're going to vote is actually not very useful. I don't know that that's other people's opinion or not, but that is mine. So be interested in what people have to say. Ms. Porter?
I apologize. I'm going back a bit to A again. I made this point before, but perhaps I didn't make it in a constructive way. The thing about board members will ensure that all communication they receive is shared with the full board and management. I assume that means all significant communication. If I receive an email from a constituent and at the end they said, by the way, can you do something about those elevators? I wouldn't share that with the entire board. And I'm assuming you mean significant communications, right?
Would you send it on to Rich and say, I have a concern from somebody I know rides the elevator?
I would be happy to communicate the gist of it. That would be the concern rather than forwarding every communication I have that mentions something having to do with Metro, which I think would not be constructive.
Okay. Saying... You're qualifying communication with what word, Kathy?
Significant. The idea being that I'm sure I'm not the only person on the board who receives communications on other topics in which there is an incidental mention of a WMATA issue. And I'm just wanted to clarify that I don't consider that to be covered by this, although I would be very happy to share with the board on an informal basis sort of the summary of those kinds of things.
Mr. McKay.
Well, I actually was going to bring up the exact same topic because I have the same challenge. We'll get reports, for example, from Sierra Club that talk about 100 topics, and in there there's a comment about something related to Metro. That's different than, for me, an email from a writer concerned about an issue which needs a response and immediately goes to the general manager through the board secretary to give us a draft reply. And so there is a distinction a little bit in the communication, and I'm not sure if you change the type of communication or you change the word to ensure. I mean, change the word ensure. I'm not sure which would be better, to say that, you know, there's some discretion that board members should exercise, maybe instead of significant communication, because I don't want to be the judge of significant communication necessarily, but I also don't want to be held to a standard that all communication that I get that has any reference to Metro would be shared with the board and management. So I'm not sure exactly how you adjust the language, but there has to be some discretionary flexibility in that, because I'm at the same place, Kathy, as if I shared all the communication I got, our poor staff and the rest of you board members would be jammed with emails. So I think there has to be a reasonableness test in this area.
Communication which is Metro-focused, as opposed to mentioning, you know, the aside, maybe that's a way to get at it too, where it's a direct, I need a response. I mean, I can imagine that we might get something that says, what are you doing about X? And you as a board member might say, you know, we had a report on that, go to the website, look at this. You've taken care of it. You don't even send it in to staff to deal with it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good flag, Will. Ms. O'Keefe.
Madam Chair, I think that the intent of that is to address communications really more in the nature of a request for a response, a request that requires some type of staffing for a response. So, for example, in the earlier, in number one, there's a, that section uses the term request. This is, in three, we're using the term communication, but I think in both instances, the intent is to address communication / requests that need some staffing response.
Okay. So that's helpful, too.
We can firm that up or clarify it so that it's clear that's what it meant, because obviously elected officials are not going to provide every communication they receive from their constituents that might involve Metro. So
after the word communication, you would have requiring staff assistance. And that would probably be the easiest way to deal with it. Board members will ensure that all communication receiving staff assistance is shared with the full board and management.
That may get us there. We can definitely spend some
something along those lines.
But I think it's a good flag. Okay. Liaison to established stakeholder groups is actually a new idea that we talked about. So the language here is a placeholder. And we pulled out the two committees where we thought, in fact, there were already relationships with outside groups or board-created groups. I don't know that there are any others, but procedures, again, will be updated annually, so if more relationships occur, we could add there if we wanted to. Okay, so now we'll go back to public comment. See what people are interested in. Mr. Nichols.
I'm sorry, just a question.
Sure.
And maybe we should defer the discussion. I was wanted a question about the liaison role
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
What would, as you would see that, what would that entail? I mean, a liaison to the committee, that can take on a wide range of expectations or responsibilities. It's a pretty broad statement, and I'm not sure exactly what that means. And the committee meets, the board committees meet with these various groups. What does that mean?
Well, I think.
And is it really redundant to try to do that?
I think I'll speak to it from my experience in doing this in our jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
The advantage can be that the chairman of these various groups know that this is the person to call if they have an issue that they want to bring to the committee's attention. It means that committee takes on a special responsibility to think about those stakeholder groups as they do their work. It's not an advocacy role. It's kind of a facilitation role. So, again, I'm reflecting on the fact that we talked about it, and so it landed here because we had that conversation, that some people were interested in identifying those relationships in the procedures. But I don't know. Mr. McKay.
Well, I guess, do we do that now? I mean, you describe what happens in your jurisdiction. Is this an entire introduction of an entirely new procedure for Metro?
I would think that it probably is. I'm looking at Ms. O'Keefe and Sheba. This has not been explicit before, right?
No, it definitely has not.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, the only one thing in the past that has been a concern, at least of mine, is it seems to be kind of hit or miss when a board member might go to a RAC meeting or some other, and there's not really, as a board member, you don't really know if you have an open invitation to always attend those, if there's a topic coming up that might be of specific interest to you that you want to go. It's just kind of a hit or miss with when dealing with these committees. As was mentioned, most of these committees also give reports to committees or to the full board already, and I guess the only thing I'm concerned about is, are we putting in an extra step that maybe isn't entirely necessary? For example, if there's an issue that the TOC has, you know, that they want to have brought up at a committee meeting, I would think that they would be in contact with Mr. Downey, who heads up the Safety and Security Committee anyway, because he's the chair of that committee. And so each of these kind of report by default to a committee. And so I'm just wondering if the extra step is necessary in the WMATA structure. And I'm not sure I have a clear answer if that's necessary or not. Hasn't been in the past.
Mrs. Hutchins.
I just like a statement of what you would want to accomplish here. It says that, or how, the language. I didn't mean directly. I mean, what the statement and as a placeholder, what are we trying to accomplish something in particular? Because each of the committees or commission that's mentioned falls within a structure. Safety, the riders have a role. The accessibility group has a role. So I'm not sure I can understand why they need a designee. One way or the other, there's access. Mm-hmm. And I think we communicate. So I'm not sure how this portion of liaison stakeholder goes beyond the stakeholder relationships that have been defined. And that's a clarity.
Well, I think it was just providing, when we had the initial conversation, providing some clear linkages about where those folks fit and which committee they're aligned with. But if the sense of the group is that that is not a helpful construct, I think we just take it out. Ms. Porter.
I want to disagree a little bit. I would note a couple things. It says that the board chair may designate. So it provides an opportunity, not necessarily a requirement. And I understand what people have said, but sometimes it's helpful if you are, say, you know, an individual involved in one of these things and you want to bring something to the board, and rather than simply bringing it to the chair and sort of having it diffused among the board members, if you had a particular person on the board who you knew you could go to and say, there's an issue coming up. How do you think I should handle this? Is this something that should go to the board? Should I take it to a committee chair? Should I? It helps if there's a possibility for a, I don't know how to say it, a formal, informal relationship type of thing. And I guess the other thing is, as long as it's a may and not a shall, and it provides the opportunity, then certainly we could do it in cases where we thought it would be helpful and not where we thought it would not be.
Mr. Downey?
Could I suggest we actually inquire of the TOC and the committees if they think this would improve their life? Because I think we do want to say we want to work with them. Would this be an improvement, or is it not necessary?
Well, we do have a plan to to all of those groups. So
I think that's important, because I guess the challenge that I have is the preamble here, that in order to support the board's commitment to the broadest possible communication with various stakeholders, I'm not sure that just having one person you go to facilitates the broadest possible communication. I mean, if I had a particular issue, I'd probably want, you know, the whole board to hear it. So I'm not sure that you're kind of saying, I understand May, but it's also after following that sentence, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, if your goal is to do that, you're going to do this. The May kind of goes out the door with the preamble. So I think it's important to ask these groups if this would be helpful to them or not, and to have them study this language as to how it would be most beneficial to them.
Okay, and maybe we should take a look at that. That's a good point, Jeff. I mean, I think of this in the way that Mrs. Porter described, which is I'm chairing, I think of it less with the talk than with the RAC or the AAC. I'm chairing this organization. I'm hearing some rumbling. I want to have a conversation with a board member about what my options might be to manage this through, you know, to get it actually to the board. So it's more of a, it's a strategy and a coaching on how to be effective inside the organization. Structure as opposed to adding new layers, but it's sort of help. And I have heard this from others over the years, that sometimes the RAC is really great at being with the board in terms of moving issues in a parallel fashion, same with the AAC, and other years the communication isn't great, and so things are out of sync, and you're not, the board isn't getting the advantage of their communication in the most timely manner, aligned to when we have to make decisions. Now, that's anecdotal, because I haven't been here long enough. Mrs. Hutchins.
I think it should be a major role of the chair in terms of relationships with the board to try and make sure stakeholder relationships are a primary responsibility. That is, and next to that, then board members have a role. Not an individual liaison, because if you're not maintaining that relationship, and you're not, and the stakeholder committee cannot penetrate the board, then I think we have greater problems there. So I'm not sure that this is a need as I see it, but I do see that we have to in working with the stakeholders to develop what is the best relationship, way of communicating it without relationship.
Right. Mr.
Yeah.
Nichols.
Yeah, I would echo that concern, in that I think the board, this might have the effect of diluting the board's accountability to that committee. I mean, the fact that we have those committees there means that we recognize their strategic and operational importance to the system. And if we delegate the responsibility to kind of hear from them to one person, I think it sends a message that the full board doesn't recognize the importance of ensuring that their message and their input is taken seriously by the full board, and that we haven't just relegated it to a liaison because we don't have an ear for them. And then I'm concerned that message may also come across. I think the intent I strongly support. So I'm not speaking to the intent at all. I'm just wondering about how the messaging comes across. And to the extent that we ask those stakeholders if they think the liaison would be valuable, I think that the question to them is, if the liaison might be valuable, what is it that they really need and want? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it the liaison, or is it to make sure that the board hears what they want?
Right. Well, I think the suggestion that we could leave some of this here and flag it for conversation with those groups is a good one. The other thing I just want to remind everybody about is these are the procedures, right? So in the bylaws, we clearly state that communication with all of these groups is highly important to the board. And I suspect that even in the chair's responsibilities, there's something about cultivating communication. This is kind of the next layer down, which says the chairman may delegate those relationships to others. And again, we have to recognize that whoever those eight people are who ultimately are the principals, somebody has to step into this role periodically. And there's a lot of responsibility as we have written this chairman's role. Now, And that I think we have to create some ways for the chair to appropriately share the wealth, if you will, in the procedures. So, and again, so I go back to where Mrs. Porter was, which is the may actually is important. Certain chairmen might want to hold it all in place. Other people might say, can't make this all work, and this is one where I can ask those two committee chairmen to be the liaison. So just, you know, we have to think past who's in the role right now and how we can create some possibilities to share some of the work. So that would be my other thing. All right. So I will, when I go to, or when we, whoever's coming with me, I'd love to have company, by the way, at the MARAC meeting if anybody else wants to come. All right. Are we ready to move to public comment? Yeah. Oh, Mr. Downs. Is your mic on?
I understand why we reference the JCC.
Yep.
I don't understand why we don't reference either the RAC or the Access Advisory Committee, which are also both instruments of this board, created by the board, reporting directly to the board.
The reason is that in the bylaws, there's a lot more detail about the RAC and the ACC than about the JCC. And and we may reach the conclusion that we don't want to have anything in procedures about how we expect the manager to work with the JCC, which is this, the JCC piece is, Carol, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a placeholder at the moment to make sure we deal with this. We could decide that it doesn't need to be here, but the RAC and the ACC have bylaws which the board has approved. There's a lot of other paper around those other two committees that we have only a resolution on the JCC. So that's my explanation.
And you're sticking with it.
I'm sticking with it right now.
I would just say that the JCC is a different type of organization than are the two other bodies that have been created with extensive bylaws. JCC is really, as we've discussed before, an enhanced staff organization function so that the representatives of the various jurisdictions will have a formalized way of communicating with WMATA staff to better assist the board. So it's more what I consider an extended staffing function as opposed to the two other entities, BRAC and the AEC, have very formalized bylaws and are forming a more outward-looking function to receive comments from the public, whereas the JCC is largely a staffing function. So how much or how little the board wants to address in its procedures is really up to the board. And again, in what I had asked the JCC folks to do is take a look at the 1983 resolution to see how much or how little needs to be preserved, either separately in a separate resolution or in the board procedures. So long answer to short question. I think it's a very different type of entity. So its placement in the procedures is indicative of that.
Okay.
Well, you just don't want to talk about public comment. Okay. So do people have an opinion? I mean, we really do need to figure this out. Right now, our procedures preclude us from instituting a public comment period at committee meetings in the manner in which we do it at the regular board meetings. The bylaws say, I believe, that people can be invited to make presentations. But I think this, you know, that's what it says in the bylaws. So what do folks think? Mr. Costa, are you looking at me like you want to say something?
I think in some cases it might be helpful. I think if we decide to proceed down this path, I think, for instance, you could look at a scenario where we identify certain action items. Where we are inviting public to testify on that particular topic. And, you know, there might be certain budget issues or whatever where it may be helpful to have that discussion. We also publish a subsequent agenda items list so we can identify at that point where we would seek testimony at that, or comment at that point. So I think it could be used in a meaningful way. I don't think having a open session may accomplish what we want, but I think if we're a little more selective about the items that we would like to take testimony on, I think it could be a helpful thing.
Mr. McKay.
Well, I think there's a difference between the public comment at the board and committee level. I mean, you can come to the board and comment on anything you want.
Right.
And I don't want at our safety committee to have to eat into time by having public comment on, I don't know, a metro access accessibility fare issue. And so I think if it's targeted that the comments are related to the committee and not just an open public comment period is one way to make it meaningful to what the committee is hearing that particular day. That's one comment. You know, I think my second comment is if you're going to do this, you have to provide some information in advance to the public as to what you're going to be hearing and what they're commenting on. And I'm not sure with the scheduling challenges that we have how you do that effectively. You know, if I'm a member of the public and I want to reasonably comment on something that the committee is discussing, how am I going to know really when the trigger is to do that? That's a concern of mine because I don't know, you know, we want meaningful comment. What we don't want is to eat into valuable committee time where we're already pressed to get through an agenda with things that aren't relative to that committee. So how you capture that in here, I don't know. You know, the second piece is, and I mentioned this before, that I would be okay with this if the companion understanding is crystal clear that we're having a new way of determining things that come forward to the board. And we had an experience not too long ago with an item that should have been a consent item. It came up, the decision was already made, and we were scratching our heads trying to figure out why we were even talking about it. So if the staff has better ability to put things on consent agendas that don't need discussion of the board, then that frees up some time for us to be able to take constructive, meaningful public comment. And I think all those things have to happen together for me to get there on doing it at committee meetings.
Ms. Hutchins?
I think this is a difficult subject because the discussion might imply that we're not looking for input. But I don't think that's my view. I think we are trying to find a constructive way to allow our customers and other stakeholders to provide input. And I think we've gone through structuring the committees that really broadly define roles they play that allow us to get input from them at a particular time frame or on a particular issue. We allow both input by these committees and the public at the board meeting. And I think it's the way the agendas for matters of major importance to our customers should provide an element of input before we get to decision point. And so I think that, and I still believe that the committee, our committee role, is work session role. We're working through when and how do we get to an approval process. And when we are ready for an approval process, hopefully we've had the input that we need, not only from staff, but also from the affected parties that that approval would affect. So I'm wondering if we need to make certain that as we're bringing things through the committee, we've had the opportunity to communicate with the Writers Advisory, with accessibility, and then the open time frame of that discussion is input from the public. And I believe that input from the public is not always in person.
Mm-hmm.
I get lots of letters that guide me and say, here's an opinion, and I expect you to at least consider that opinion. So because otherwise you're leveling this process before approval to a constant, to me, churn of the ideas, mm-hmm. and hopefully we're structuring those ideas as they move through the process. For example, it may be an information item first, and then it may be an action item. So somewhere in between there, we need to have a way to get the public in. I think what our challenge is to how to get it there. Mm-hmm. Is it an implied fact that certain items that affect, name it, fares, service, and so forth, always are going to get some hearing from those committees before we act on them? And we acknowledge that, but then do we need to have other means of doing that?
I mean, as a practical matter, in some cases we have a committee meeting in the morning. We act on it in the afternoon. The meaningful discussion is at the committee, and there isn't a lot of opportunity after that discussion has occurred to really hear from others. If we were to do this, I'm sort of the same place as others, I would certainly want to see it very restricted to items relevant to the agenda, action items on the agenda, not sort of general, what do you think about safety or operations? We can deal with that at the board, but I think there might be a place for some timely and meaningful comment before we've firmed up our mind. When we finish a committee meeting and have recommended something to the board, especially for a committee of the whole, I don't expect people to come in later and say, you know, I've reconsidered it and have different views.
Ms. Porter?
I appreciate all the comments that have been made, and generally I agree with them, even the ones that are not totally consistent with each other. I think this is a complicated issue. I was going to make a couple of suggestions for dealing with it at committee meetings. One would be that perhaps the chair of the committee could designate certain items, and following Mr. Downey's delineation, certain items that would benefit from a broader discussion at the committee, and then the public comment would be restricted to those items, not generally to safety, but to this item that the board is considering. The other way to do it might be to structure public comment at the committees through the organizations that the board has already designated as being its conduits for public comment, the RAC and the Accessibility Advisory Committee, giving them an opportunity at the committee meetings, either for in certain instances or on a general basis, to make a very short comment with the assumption that it would be on the items that are before the committee at that point.
Mr. Nichols, did you have your hand up? Oh, Ms. O'Keefe.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to remind the committee members of what the bylaws say about this. And it is on, well, I'm looking at a marked up version. But the bylaws currently, as proposed, not adopted, provide that the committee chairs not only may limit debate, but may also seek specific comment from its various committees or other parties. Obviously, other parties would include the public, and they may allow a comment or presentation. So that gives quite a bit of latitude to the committee chairs. It does not go so far as to say during the committee meeting. So that's the one issue. And there is a lot of latitude. Should the board wish, the committee chairs could determine items that they would be prepared to take public comment and or either written or at the meeting itself.
And I do think we wrote it that broadly, knowing that we needed to have some more specific, because if we're going to move this way, we actually probably do need more procedural guidance in the procedures than is in the bylaws. But Mr. Downs, did you have a comment?
Only that I've often thought that the public comment process was backwards. In the committee, we deliberate a variety of inputs to come to a kind of collective decision to make a recommendation to the board. I think there's a legitimacy about having the public be able to comment at the committee level, and it probably has more utility for the public at the committee level than it does a kind of general slate at the board meeting. But I'm also struck by the number of board meetings that go by without any public comment, and I'm not sure what we're protecting ourselves from by not having public comment at the committee meeting process. I agree with the limitations on subject matter. I think there are a series of things that we could make clear to the public about our expectations about what helps the deliberative process, but I'm still not sure I understand why we would preclude the public from making comments at the committee meeting. It seems part of the deliberative process that we develop at the committee level.
Mr. McKay and then Ms.
Well, I think I'm comfortable with it as long as there's a change to public comment at the board meetings, because the way I read this is that, you know, you identify yourself and the subject matter and or agenda item to which their comments pertain. Many times the public comment at the board meeting has nothing to do with what's on the agenda that day. It's a concern somebody has, legitimate, but it has nothing to do with what's on the agenda. And so I would suggest if you're going to take public comment at the committee meeting that you change the format of the public comment at the board meeting to be open.
Non-agenda.
If that's the time when somebody can come with any issue they have. Because, for example, if I want to speak to the board about something that happened to me on the system, when do I do that? You know, do I come to the safety committee meeting because I slipped down an escalator last week? Does that pertain to the safety committee agenda that day? It may not. Do I come to the board meeting? What happens now is people come to the board meeting. And so I think you need to provide an open comment period or a subject on any subject that one wants to bring forward that's, you know, doesn't deal with maybe a procurement or some other type of issue that, you know, is protected. But you need an open public comment period, and then you need a targeted public comment period. And I know in our own jurisdiction, you know, we have agenda items, land use cases, the budget, whatever, where we take speakers related to that item. And then we also have an open forum for people to come talk about whatever they want. And I think if you provide the clarity of those two in here, you can control the comment that comes to the committee meetings to be germane to the subject items that are at the committee. Going back to my original comment that you don't want to have the committee meetings overtaken by issues that aren't germane. And so I think if you clarify those two venues and what they are, I think that'll go a long way towards helping with that.
Okay. Mr. Nichols.
I think that my concern is that we do this in isolation. I mean, for me, it's what is our plan and our strategy for making the opportunity of communication available to this system at a board level, at an operational level, or wherever the various inputs are required. And I'm struck by one of the comments that Commissioner Hudgens made, and that is, you know, the playing field needs to be level. If we have communication available, there are a lot of people who it's great that they can attend our meetings. Most people can't. They simply can't. And if the message is that that individual or organization that has the greatest availability to sit in front of us would have the greatest influence on our decisioning, I think that's a very bad precedent to set. It's a very bad message to send. And if it's an issue that is important enough for us to receive public comment, then we need to make sure that we receive public comment, and we need to define the avenues for comment and the places for comment. And it is ad hoc and random to receive comment and suggest to the community that we open ourselves to influence, to the disproportionate influence of someone who may have the opportunity to come and sit before us before we make a decision. And I don't think that's the right message to send. I don't want to squelch our openness toward communication, but if we are going to, but we need to look at our communication system in its totality. Where are the avenues? What are the opportunities? And how do we apply that communication? And I think and how do we help our board to be more efficient? I mean, we struggle with having enough time to examine in depth the critical issues that are important to the board, and that doesn't suggest we need to diminish public input. We just need to decide how we get it most efficiently and effectively so that the public feels well-served and that we as a board can operate most efficiently.
If I could, this has actually been, I think, a really good conversation. If I could sum up a little bit, I would say that thinking through how we get comment at the discussion level as opposed to the decision level is something that we need to do. And what I heard people say is very clearly we need to identify in our committee agendas those places where we are actively seeking public comment. And if we do that appropriately, I think it begins to address some of what Mr. Nichols is saying, which is the board is signaling to the reading public, hey, if you have an opinion about this, now's the time. You've got this window to send in whatever you think, as well as there'll be a moment at the board at the committee meeting where you might be able to come and talk. I would also take us back, I think, to our description of our job, which is actually in the bylaws, where we talk about we provide policy direction and oversight. And really, our committee meeting this morning was totally an oversight committee meeting, you know, bringing us up to speed, opportunity to ask back and forth. There's no reason for public comment when our focus is on providing oversight. When our focus is we're developing new policy or we're wrestling with an issue that will come to the board and result in a resolution directing staff in a new or particular way, that's where we really want to have public comment. So helping ourselves sort of sort that through, I think, and for committee chairmen to begin to think about their agendas in that manner, I think begins to advance our work and to clarify what we're doing. And then the last thing, you know, and you all know, I think, in charts, Mr. Nichols' comment really makes me think we need to kind of lay this public input thing out so we can look at, you know, how do people get information, how do they give us response, and are there gaps that we should be thinking about or procedures which might help us begin to open some avenues for folks who currently don't have them. So are people comfortable with us trying to kind of do a rewrite here along those lines, Mr. Barnes?
Well, I wonder if we really need to. Council has advised that the bylaws permit it. If a committee chair sees an item that is logical for public comment, the committee chair could put that on the agenda to have the comment, but we don't need to put in here the suggestion that there will routinely be public comment at committees. I certainly agree with everyone who has noted that we want to have maximum capability for the public to access us and give us their views. But I don't know of another agency that does more than this one. I mean, we're all about to have town hall meetings and hearings, and we have the public comment process at every board meeting. So committee chair discretion, which is already permitted apparently, seems to me to solve this issue. If there's something coming up for action that clearly cries out for allowing the public to have an opportunity to comment prior to the decision making in committee, we open it up. But otherwise, we wouldn't routinely do so. We talked 2 weeks ago about finding a way to reduce the amount of committee time. We're now talking about a way to increase committee time. I favor the former rather than the latter. Not because of my personal schedule. I'm not thinking about that at all. I'm thinking of the time of the staff and an efficient use of the resources of the agency.
Ms. O'Keefe.
Madam Chair, may I suggest that we take another look offline, staff-wise, at the procedures for public comment and think about how they would apply to committee public comment should a committee chair decide to invite public comment at a committee meeting. Because right now, just as a little historical note for the board, this was adopted some years ago, but at a time when the board decided to invite public comment at its board meetings, it was a big, big step because the board and this organization had not operated in that way historically. So a lot of the strictures in the comments originate from that big first step. We've tried to tweak it a little bit, but if the board's inclined to, from time to time, invite comment at the committee, we need to really look at those again and see if there are any adjustments need to be made.
And I guess, Mr. Barnes, and I appreciate your comments. I am keenly aware that many of our stakeholder groups at the moment don't feel invited to comment in the public setting or in some other ways. And I think we may be on a journey where we need to write it down the first year or two, saying, here's what we're going to do, so people know if something has a star on it in a committee agenda coming up, that this is an area of the board will likely take comment, so that we get some practices in place that people feel they can rely on. If it's totally ad hoc, I think we don't begin to address some of the criticism that this board received around this area, particularly from the Writers Advisory Group. So if with your all permission, we'll go back and kind of, as Ms. O'Keefe suggested, take a look at this, and we'll bring something back for your review. Is that all right? Mr. Dunn.
It might be useful to look at, say, the last year's worth of agendas,
mm-hmm.
see how many times that might have been invoked. And I wouldn't suggest, for example, we do it on fair and service. We
absolutely
have a whole process.
We have another process.
But we can look through those agendas and see. I think it'll turn out to be fairly few, but in cases it might have been useful to get that input.
Okay. We'll do that, too. All right. So shall we move? We'll look at this whole section on procedure for public comment then, with an eye toward our conversation. Article 4, committee and board meetings. There's not, this is, yes, Mr. Yule.
2D on procedures for oral comment.
2D?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. D3.
Yep.
I have a problem with that.
Okay.
In order to ensure that as many people as possible have an opportunity to address the board, speakers may address the board only once during a 3-month period.
This is what's in the current procedures.
Well, can you change that?
I would favor changing that.
I mean, we're talking about affording folks more opportunities to be able to engage and talk to us, but yet we limit them to once every 3 months. I mean, it's contradictory.
Do the majority of you agree? I'd be happy to have this one go away.
I just think you just delete it.
Yeah. I think the worry when it was put in place was that you would develop a cadre of people who would come every month and talk about the very same thing every month. Another board that I'm on has a rule that you can come as often as you want, but you can't speak on the same topic 2 months in a row, so that you preclude people from kind of beating the drum all the time. But I don't know, Ms. Hudson?
I think our procedures were written somewhat in a defensive posture of public comment, and that it, as Ms. O'Keefe indicated, we became comfortable with public comment. And now that there is a free flow of time at the board specifically, we don't have very many people coming because they have, I think, developed a sense of access. And that's what we want to continue to create. And I'm not sure it's necessary to limit the number of times you've come to the board. And maybe there's a trigger somewhere along the way that you, what you limit that individual. I don't know. It's some other way, but...
Can I just add my personal experience? And, you know, what the board wants to do is fine. I came from a different organization which did not put any limits on it, and it's exactly what happened. We had the same 4 people making the same comments at every meeting, you know, went on and on. So it's just something to consider.
We have it here.
We just don't hear them every month.
It's just that I don't think you should limit. And then number 4, speakers shall be limited to members of the public who are not WMATA employees. I understand that we don't want our employees to come, WMATA employees to come and dominate a public comment period and talk to us about, you know, employee-related, personnel-related matters, but they are public. I mean, members of the public. They're our riders, our users. Do we need to say that they who are not WMATA employees?
I think you perhaps confuse relationships when you have the employees coming directly to the board with their issues and not going to
well,
the manager? Mr. McKay?
I kind of agree with Mr. Yule. I think what we don't want to have happen is protected under number one, that comments related to individual personnel issues or disputes in contracts, and maybe we want to broaden that a little bit to protect. What we don't want is our employees, you know, coming with an individual grievance they have with another employee to a board meeting. But I agree, they're members of the public, and if they have something to say about an organization they care about, they ought to be able to tell us. So I think we're kind of protected. Maybe we need to look, maybe council needs to look at that sentence and broaden it a little bit under the auspice that we may be eliminating number four and protect yourself in number one from what is clearly the intent here was to not have some issues come before us that are inappropriate and may in fact be brought by employees. So as long as the employees are coming to comment on germane things, I think they ought to be able to, but I think you can protect yourself in number one more comprehensively if you're going to eliminate, if you're going to allow members of the employment, WMATA employment, to come testify. And I know my own jurisdiction, we certainly take testimony from county employees, and they know they're not, it's not appropriate to come down and talk about why they don't like their boss. Or other things of that nature, but it is appropriate for them to comment on our budget. They may be taxpayers in our district. We'd want to hear from them. So there's a grayness in there that has to be addressed in item one better before you take away number four.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I agree with Mayor Yule and Mr. McKay on that. Having chaired a public hearing on the budget, we certainly saw some employees coming. The public hearing comment on the budget, so I think eliminating that would be appropriate with the correct language and all that associated with the first paragraph.
Okay. Can I go back to number three for a minute? Is it the sense of the board that we can remove number three?
Yes.
We can. That's true.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Giancola.
Just think of it like this. They still only have 3 minutes, so.
Two minutes.
Or 2 minutes. Okay, we've reduced it.
Okay. All right. We are at our hour, folks, and I know we have a number of other things that we need to do. We meet again. This committee will meet again May 12th. I would encourage folks to walk your way through the sheet that was provided with all of the various changes and to make next time as efficient as possible, flag those areas where we think we should have discussion and let me know that in advance, and then we'll just kind of breeze through that way. Mr. Downs?
I realize it's not timely, but I just want to put a placeholder on. In procedures, the board, I think, ultimately needs to make a commitment to an annual calendar process that includes the fiscal planning process that is continuous from the time of the adoption of the new budget, a business planning process that is updated annually, trends in external factors, demographics. This is just a good business practice. Corporate boards do it all the time. We get trapped in a very reactive mode. Almost all of our agenda is dictated by stuff that comes up from the staff that needs a timely decision from the board. So maybe 90% of our entire agenda is reactive rather than proactive about the highest functions of this board, the policy and accountability and strategic management side of the governance of the authority. We need to ultimately address that as part of the commitments that we make in procedures. I think after the strategic planning retreat, perhaps we would be better equipped to make a commitment to an annual process that the board commits to as part of an annual planning process that makes our work predictable for the staff and predictable for the public and predictable for us.
I certainly wouldn't disagree with you about the need for us to commit to that. I'm not sure whether we haven't already committed to it in the bylaws. We have not. Okay. So we need to, I agree, after we do our strategic plan, make it clear. Yes, Mr. Downey?
Just flag a subject for the next time when we have the time to discuss it. I'm concerned by the evolution of these documents with respect to executive sessions. Initially, it was a presumption that there not be executive sessions of committees and a fairly tight process to make them on the board. It's kind of migrated now to where every chairman could have executive sessions at the chairman's prerogative, and I think that's inconsistent with the transparency that we're trying to achieve. So I'd like to have a discussion of that at one of our upcoming meetings.
Well, and we may find that we need to have some of that conversation when we do our bylaws discussion in the next meeting, because we have made, I'm right, am I not, Ms. O'Keefe, we've made a few, we've tried to make a few changes to align these things, and perhaps we have made them in the wrong direction based of where the board wants to be. So let's make sure we have that conversation in the next meeting, okay? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.